doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We wish you a irie Christmas. Old Year and New Year's are just the same. Christmas on a broke pocket day. We wish you a irie Christmas. We wish you a irie Christmas. We wish you a irie Christmas and a dance all New Year. Great tidings, Natty Jane, bring you. Great tidings.
All right, we are back. I forget, by the way, Hockey Central at noon today, followed by Tim and Sid, and then Bob McCowan's got his Christmas extravaganza, which is always a lot of fun. And a primetime sports starting at 4 o'clock. Not a great deal of sports on tonight. Or tomorrow, for that matter. Tomorrow, it's all NBA. There's probably some godforsaken college football game as well. They used to have the blue-gray game. I don't even know if they play that anymore. And then the Raptors get back at it on Saturday. Of course, the biggest event, without question, the biggest event of the holiday sports season or the days around Christmas begins Boxing Day or resumes Boxing Day when the Premiership plays 10 matches. 10 Premiership soccer matches. John Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer for Fox Sports. He's also a huge soccer fan. He joins us on the Blair Show. First of all, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And your family. Everybody's doing well, I presume. Number two is sleeping safely. And
well, she's actually, thank you very much, Jeff, and Elena Grace Morosi. I'm actually holding her right now. So she's probably one little peep away from making her Canadian radio debut.
There you go.
But she's doing great, starting to sleep a little bit more, so mom's getting a little bit of a break at nighttime.
Excellent.
Big sister Gabrielle is doing great, and thanks again, Jeff, for your wishes and all the well wishes from everybody over there at the Fan.
Now, she has not watched any Detroit Lions games or anything like that. She's done. She's still pure as far as a sports fan goes, right?
Yeah, she's okay. Maybe caught little glimpses of hockey games on television here and there, but she may, you know, Sunday is a big game, of course, for the Lions, because if they win, they get the bye. But this is, as you know, Jeff, the Lions have not won a football game in the great state of Wisconsin in more than 20 years. So we'll see if they're able to end that streak here on Sunday. But yeah, she may. You know, this is watching the Lions lose big games is something of a family tradition for a lot of us here in the state of Michigan, Jeff. So at some point in time, she's going to have to partake in that as well.
You know, one of my favorite stories was the one you told us about your first daughter, Gabriella. Gabrielle?
Sitting
in front of the TV set during a Lions game and then just starting to wail uncontrollably for no apparent reason. That's still one of the funniest stories ever.
On Thanksgiving, she was about 2 months old, 3 months old, and she anticipated the collapse before it even happened. She sensed it. She just started to bawl uncontrollably, and then it wasn't until a few minutes later where I realized that she had sort of sensed the Lions' doom through the television set, through some innate sports know-how, I guess. She probably knows sports better than I do already at this point in time, but she just sensed it. She knew it was coming, and that poor child just bawled throughout the remainder of the Lions' collapse on that Thanksgiving Day loss in 2012.
Kids are way ahead of us when it comes to that. You just know. John Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer for Fox Sports, joining us on The Blair Show. All right. To the business at hand, so to speak. So Jason Grilli signs a 2-year deal with the Atlanta Braves. He's off the market now. We heard the Jays had some interest in him. John, I got to ask you, the Jays, they know they need at least two arms for the back of that bullpen. They need two pretty good arms for the back of that bullpen. It just seems to me that with every passing day, it gets harder and harder and harder for Alex Anthopoulos to address that situation. I mean, I'm of the belief, okay, you can maybe trade for one of those arms. I don't think you're going to be able to put together deals to get, you know, to get two back of the bullpen arms that are legit arms anyhow.
I agree. I think the most realistic scenario, Jeff, probably involves trading for one of those arms and then signing the other one. And John Heyman of CBS Sports had a very interesting report today, I believe, that the Jays have at least considered the possibility of acquiring Jonathan Papelbon from the Phillies or Tyler Clippard from the Nationals, both of whom are known to be available. And I think in the case of Papelbon, this is probably a question of money as much as it is prospects. If the Jays can come up with enough of the money to satisfy what the Phillies are asking for from a relief standpoint, I could see that deal coming together. We know, of course, Papelbon has experience in the American League East, so that he's checked that box. And when you think about it, the Phillies just need some level of whether it's prospects or financial relief to just start the process of their rebuild. And I think on a certain level, obviously they would love to get prospects and some financial relief, but it could be some combination thereof. And I do think the Jays, Jeff, have enough prospects left so that way they don't have to necessarily deplete their entire farm system if they were to trade for Papelbon. I think they have enough left to do it. And I think Papelbon, all things considered, there have always been questions, at least like the last couple of years, about his attitude. I think a lot of that's overrated. I still think with Papelbon as the ball in the ninth inning, I have a pretty good idea he's going to close it out. And I think for what the Jays need, some certainty in the back part of that bullpen, I actually think Papelbon might be the best option they have out there, even including the free agents like Francisco Rodriguez and Rafael Soriano as well.
You know, you mentioned Tyler Clippard, and I find that interesting because one of the things Alex was pretty clear about going into the offseason is he talked about the closer's position. I mean, he essentially said, look, I don't know if we'll be able to, you know, fish in those free agent waters in the Andrew Miller waters or the David Robertson waters. He said, you know, we may end up focusing on a guy who has been a setup guy or a guy who has a little bit of closing experience but lost that role and maybe a guy that we can take a bit of a flyer on. And Clippard would seem to be that guy.
He would. And I think this is a year, Jeff, where the Nationals are looking to move maybe one or two of their free agents to be after the season to get maybe to hedge a little bit and plan for the future because, of course, they have, as we know, on the offensive side of things, Ian Desmond. They also have Jordan Zimmermann in their rotation, all up for new contracts after the coming season. So the Nationals are known to be interested in reshuffling a little bit. And Clippard is a guy. He did close a little bit for the Nationals last year. I think he's probably still best in the eighth inning, but he does have some closing experience. He closed, I think, for about 6 weeks, maybe a couple months, sort of in between. I think it was more like 6 weeks in between Rafael Soriano and Drew Storen last year with the Nationals. So he's done it before. He's done it relatively recently. Good stuff. I think he would be an interesting fit. I did think Sergio Romo would have been a good possibility if he hadn't re-signed with the Giants. And, you know, Francisco Rodriguez, my understanding was, at least a couple weeks ago, Jeff, that the Jays were not really engaged with Scott Boras on either Francisco Rodriguez or Rafael Soriano, both of whom are Boras clients. But when you look at K-Rod's numbers for his career, he's been really good. And, in fact, he's got more saves at this same age than Mariano Rivera did. So he is one of the best closers ever when you talk about saves in terms of the age that he's at. And I would still feel comfortable with the repertoire he was able to adjust to last year with Milwaukee. I think he had a pretty good season overall. So I wouldn't totally dismiss that possibility either.
We are told that the Blue Jays have made an offer or at least discussing Takashi Toratani. Alex Anthopoulos mentioned in our show that he was a guy they had some internal discussions about, and he essentially said, look, he can put two and two together and come to the conclusion that we have an interest in him. We're told that he is represented by Scott Boras, obviously. We're told that there's some issue with terms. Surprise, surprise. we know that Boras and the Blue Jays do not have a particularly healthy history of dealing with each other. Do you think the Jays are the front runners for this guy?
You know, Jeff, I'll be honest. I have not heard a ton about the two of them linked together, but I think when you look at the big picture of the Jays offensively, it seems like they're willing to maybe roll the dice a bit on their existing second base options and see how that all fits together. Obviously, they have Reyes at third, and or short, rather, and they made the move for Donaldson at third. So I think when you talk about the way their overall offense could come together, they seem to be decently content with the with some of the options they have internally, I think, at second base. But bringing him along, I think there is the possibility, as you alluded to, with Toritani, but it doesn't sound like he's necessarily higher on their wish list than the closing situation. I think right now, if I'm the Jays, I address everything I can from a closing standpoint before I worry about any other aspects of the club. I think as we talked about off the top, I almost think two relievers would be more important than bringing Toritani on. So I think certainly, as you alluded to, there's probably a possibility there, but I think it's probably a distant priority behind getting that bullpen figured out.
John Paul Morosi joins the Jeff Blair Show. One name that kind of intrigues me. You talked about the Phillies, and we talked about Papelbon, a guy who has been getting a lot of discussion lately, not necessarily connecting him with the Blue Jays, but this whole situation with Ryan Howard, where, I mean, essentially you have a general manager saying, Ryan, we need to get rid of you to move on. Right. We just don't know if we can. Where is that going? And is there, I mean, you know, is there a chance? I mean, are they trying to set up Ryan Howard in some way to have him negotiate his way out of the contract or something? Because it's an odd situation for a general manager to be that open about his intentions with the player. And I'm not saying that Ruben Amaro Jr. is wrong. I think he's absolutely right. It's just that I don't know if I want him saying that.
Yeah, it really was an interesting comment. You almost never hear the comments coming out of a general manager on the order of what Ruben Amaro Jr. said about Ryan Howard. Effectively, we're better off without you than we are with you, which is, I would say, you know, Jeff, we work in a business where sometimes GMs equivocate and there's a hidden meanings behind things. I think in this case, Ruben Amaro Jr. meant exactly what he said.
I think it was pretty clear.
It's hard to really find different meanings in those words. He basically said, we're better off without you. So and it's pretty harsh about a former MVP of the National League. So I think here's how I look at his market in a couple of different ways. Number one, he's got $60 million left, okay? So there's not really, we know the way the players' union works in MLB, they're not going to really negotiate a buyout. That doesn't really happen in baseball. So there's nothing really to be done on those lines. But I do think, if the Phillies ate about $50 million or so, and I know that's kind of a big if and that's a lot of money, but if they were able to eat that amount of money, I think there are enough teams that would look at him and say, you know what, $10 million for Ryan Howard is actually a reasonable sum of money. Because for all his faults, he did hit 23 homers this year. Mm-hmm. He did drive in more than 90 runs. And if you look at the combination of home runs, RBIs, and games played in terms of his categories, I believe it was 23 homers, 90, like mid-90s RBIs, and then 153 games, I think. Only 11 players in the game met all three of those categories or exceeded them in terms of the numbers Ryan Howard had. 11 players. So, again, some of the RBIs are a function of where he was batting. We know how that goes. But he still is a threat. And I think that when you talk about Kendrys Morales getting 2 years at $17 million with the Royals, the very similar ball player, I think, Jeff, to Ryan Howard. So if Morales is going to get two and 17, I think Howard would get at least 1 and 10 or something like that. And if that's the case, you could certainly envision Ryan Howard being somebody that's useful to the Baltimore Orioles, perhaps. Maybe the Texas Rangers, maybe even the Tampa Bay Rays if they ate enough of that money, because those three teams I mentioned do not really have a full-time DH and have not had a ton of production from that position among the current players on their roster. So I think that's a very strong possibility that Ryan Howard is an American League player at this point in time, but I like his ability to at least go out there and hit 20 homers. Mm-hmm. In this day and age, Jeff, in this industry, 20 home runs is nothing to scoff at, and Ryan Howard proved just this past season that he can still do that.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of the flip side of the whole story. Everybody's been talking about for a couple of years about how runs have decreased and how young, you know, hard-throwing pitchers are more and more becoming the norm and are the gold standard against which a lot is measured. I mean, the flip side of that is offense becomes more valuable. You know, the rarer a commodity becomes, the more valuable it is. And I think we're seeing that, you know, a lot of teams are paying a lot of attention. Look at how San Diego rebuilding, right-handed power.
Exactly.
It's we've really undergone almost a change in approach on the part of major league teams in the past couple of years. John, listen, we appreciate you doing this as always. Thank you so much for your help this year, and enjoy the holiday season with the newest edition.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me on and for all the well wishes. And on Boxing Day, I will probably be watching the World Juniors. I have not really dialed in completely to analyzing my rosters here, but I'm intrigued to watch this young man, Austin Matthews, from Scottsdale, Arizona, playing for Team USA. It's pretty cool story, so that should be fun to watch.
Keep an eye on Slovakia.
Slovakia? You think are they a medal threat?
I have no idea. I always just tell people to keep an eye on Slovakia when it comes to hockey.
Are we sure they're in the tournament?
Yes, they are.
Okay. we have sources can confirm.
Sources.
The Slovakian national team is in the tournament. Okay, very good.
Sources can confirm.
I still think I threw that question out on Twitter yesterday, Jeff, and the overwhelming response was that Canada will win. That may be in large part because the largest number of respondents came from Canada, but I do think that there's probably a pretty good chance the Canadian team will win.
I'll tell you what. I'll go with, I have no idea if they're, I'll go with the Finns. Finns are always a good backup choice in international hockey.
What's the old saying about the Finns, that they're everybody's favorite team until they play your team? I think that's how it goes.
That's pretty much it. They'll get a medal of some description. John, thanks so much for doing this. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you. Thanks, you too.
Take care. That's John Paul Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. We certainly do wish the Morosi family a very, very Merry Christmas. Pretty cool having a newborn like 10 days before Christmas. Of course, the best thing about having a child born around Christmas is when it comes to presents, you can basically throw it all together in one. You know, we're going to have a family Christmas party, or we're going to have a family birthday party around the 25th. You know, I mean, that's if you're, you know, some people would say that you would get twice as many gifts because they're so close together. I think that the smart thing to do is combine it into one. I mean, I'm always thinking of cost effectiveness. So Jason Grilley's off the board. I don't know if Jason Grilley was ever going to be the answer for the Blue Jays anyhow, but it's pretty clear. Here we are on the 24th, and we still don't know what the back end of the Jays' bullpen will look like. You know, I've been banging on and on about how I think Aaron Sanchez is going to be, pardon me, the closer one way or another come opening day. And I'm comfortable with that, and I know I'm in the minority when it comes to that. But we know that Alex Anthopoulos has said that he will address the bullpen situation. And I will say this about Alex. I will say this about Alex. Right from the get-go, he made it pretty clear that he thought he would probably need to trade to address the weakness in the back of the bullpen or the vacancies in the back of the bullpen. I still think you sign one guy and you acquire a guy. I think that's the way you go about doing it. There are some names out there, Rafael Soriano, Francisco Rodriguez, Jonathan Papelbon via trade. Tyler Clippard, I think, is a name that is really fascinating. You know, best case scenario is the Cincinnati Reds actually do end up moving Aroldis Chapman. Although that doesn't necessarily mean that the Jays would be at the front of that. Although I know for a fact they would have some interest and they would certainly try to put a package together to get a guy like Chapman. But secondly, even if Cincinnati were to decide to blow everything up and start over, I just don't see why at this point they would be interested in moving Aroldis Chapman. So here we are, December 24th, and the Jays have got, I would say, plan B and plan C at second base, and there's really nobody at the back end of the bullpen, unless you consider possibly Brett Cecil or rolling the dice and hoping that Steve Delabar comes back as options. And I don't think the manager feels that way. So I want to have a discussion about this at 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. We've got to keep it in a Christmas vein. I don't know why we do this. We just feel obligated to keep it in a Christmas vein. You wake up tomorrow morning. You're a Jays fan. What would you rather see under the tree from Alex Anthopoulos, a closer or a second baseman? I mean, I think John Paul Morosi's right. I think your first, if you're the Blue Jays right now, your priority is getting that bullpen fixed, getting that bullpen deepened. I'd be comfortable with Aaron Sanchez closing, but I'd be real comfortable having somebody else close than Aaron Sanchez pitching the eighth inning or Aaron Sanchez starting. I'd be fine with that as well. But if I have to go into the year with Aaron Sanchez closing, I would much rather do that than some dude off the scrap heap that isn't going to last more than 2 weeks. I'd much rather go with Aaron Sanchez. So you wake up tomorrow morning, you're a Jays fan. What would you rather see under the tree from Alex Anthopoulos? A gift-wrapped second baseman or a reliever? 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. A lot of people talking about Ben Zobrist. They've thrown his name out there. Ben Zobrist isn't coming to Toronto. I mean, we already know that the Jays are watching their money a little bit. We already know that. Now let me rephrase that. We know that there are financial considerations at play with the Blue Jays. We just don't know why yet. Some of us think part of those financial considerations stem from the fact that Alex Anthopoulos does not want to be in the position he was in last year at the trade deadline, needing to kind of rub quarters together, rub nickels together to come up with money. But there's no doubt that there are financial considerations here. So forget Ben Zobrist. I would take Ben Zobrist this minute. I might even move a considerable pitching asset to get Ben Zobrist for what he'd bring on the on the field and also in the clubhouse. But that just ain't going to happen. So, what do you need to see from Alex Anthopoulos? What would you as a Jays fan tomorrow morning when you wake up, you go downstairs and there's all those things wrapped under the tree and you put the fireplace on and you know, you're having a coffee or maybe a little orange juice and champagne. And there's this little thing from the Blue Jays. It's got a Blue Jays wrapping on it. It's from Alex Anthopoulos. What would you like it to be? A reliever or a second baseman? Eddie in Fort Erie. You're on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Eddie, my friend, best of the season.
Thank you. Same to you, Jeff. And Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad indeed.
I would love to see a closer come to Toronto instead of a second baseman, because I think we really need to get that guy that can stop, you know, rallies and everything like mm-hmm. that, especially in a one-run game. And you know what? If we don't, then we'll roll the dice just like we did last year. And if Sanchez is a closer, then fine. As long as they do something to get a reliever, I don't care who it is, if it's Clippard, if it's Soriano, if it's Rodriguez, as long as we get somebody, it doesn't really matter to me.
Well, Eddie, I'm hoping that Alex is kind of slow playing the relief market because he thinks he has options there, as opposed to he's boxed himself into a corner here. That's what I'm a little concerned about. And again, I know the offseason, it's not like the offseason stops on December 25th and you know baseball shuts down until you report to spring training. But I think a lot of Jays fans and you know Jays observers, I'll include myself in that category, I thought by now that we would have seen Alex Anthopoulos at a reliever. I didn't know if it was going to be the final piece of the puzzle, but I thought by now we'd at least have seen Alex at a guy for the eighth inning.
For sure. I think as long as they get somebody, fine. But you know what? If he wants to save money for the trading deadline, fine. But get somebody. It doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah, Eddie, I appreciate the call. Best to you and yours. And absolutely. Part of the reason, I admit, the whole thing with Aaron Sanchez, I kind of started out doing that just because I thought it would be, you know, it was a little going counterintuitive to what other people were saying. And yeah, I spoke to people around the organization too, and they've all told me the same thing. It's, you know, internally, it's a much greater option than we're talking about externally for a variety of reasons. And that's fine. I also know there's an organizational split in it when it comes to Aaron Sanchez. I mean, there are people who would love to see him start. There are people who think he needs to start. There are other people who think he's going to be a closer and a reliever. And that's just, but you get that in every organization. All I can tell you is that there are more people in the Blue Jays organization who think he is going to be an eighth or ninth inning guy this year than there are people in that organization who have him penciled in as a starter. I mean, that's just what I know. It's just what I've been told. And I'm okay with that, but I still need another arm back there. I cannot do the work Alex Anthopoulos did on his lineup and go into the season with the bullpen the way it is right now, because the bullpen was not very good last year. And the bullpen has not improved that I can see. And other teams in this division have improved their bullpen. Robin Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, all right. Alex Anthopoulos, he's going to give you a gift tomorrow. What does it need to be? Is it a reliever? You wake up in the morning, do you need a reliever, or would you rather have a second baseman?
If I have to pick between those two, I'm taking the second baseman, but I think everyone's missing the elephant in the Rogers Center here, Jeff. We need more starting pitching.
We need more starting pitching. Tell me why we need more starting pitching.
Contending teams, serious contending teams, don't go into the season with this many ifs in the starting rotation. I don't know who a number one is on the Jays on any other team.
Ifs.
Too many ifs. You got to hope Stroman catches fire again. Personally, I'm Sanchez as a starter. You hope he lights it up. Burley, I don't think you know any longer what he is. R.A. Dickey, I think, has proven himself, and it's not an ace. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who the fifth starter is. I'm looking at a team that needs starting pitching desperately.
Well,
there is no ace on this team.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I understand that. You know, the people have this desire to have an ace pitcher, but I think it's more what you have in total when it's all done. I'm more concerned about the number of innings that I have more than anything else.
I don't disagree with you, but I look at it and I say, you know, if you're not getting to the seventh and eighth inning with a lead, the bullpen doesn't matter.
Yeah. All right. Well, at this point, I think if you're the Jays, you have to look at, you have to look at where your weaknesses are and where you're best able to address those issues. And, I mean, at this point, I think you go with the starting pitching you have. You prioritize things. You just go with the starting pitching you have, and then, you know, you've got to fill out the bullpen. And you got just the way it is. Frank in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Jeff. Wish you Merry Christmas.
You too, Frank.
Okay, I got a question. I would really like Chapman. I mean, I'm a big fan. Now, my question is, I'm kind of acknowledging I have a Toronto bias because, obviously, I live in Toronto. I watch the Blue Jays all the time. What do you think the talent difference is between Sanchez and Chapman? Like, what are they, like, is Sanchez a younger Chapman? Do you need to include more in a trade to get Chapman?
Like, yeah, you wouldn't get Chapman even up for Sanchez. You know, Chapman is obviously got more of a track record. People still don't. I mean, there's some concerns about Sanchez. And I spoke to a guy last year, late in the season, a scout for another team, and he followed the Jays a bit. And I asked him about Sanchez. He said, you know, look, our reports and him, we have some concerns about his ability to get guys out third and fourth time around the order. And he said, yeah, he's a young guy. He's still going to learn, and he has good stuff. But this is a guy from another organization saying you wonder sometimes when a guy has such a difficult time dealing with guys the third and fourth time through. How is that going to carry over into the major leagues? When you see a guy having difficulty doing that in the minors, you could sit there and say, yeah, with experience, he gets better. But I mean, it doesn't always work out that way. So to get Aroldis Chapman, I mean, I don't even want to begin to think what you'd have to move to get Aroldis Chapman from the Cincinnati Reds. I really don't. And I mean, part of the deal with the Reds is that they are, they're kind of stuck in between, and they've been that way all year. And I mean, now we're hearing, they've been that way all off season. Now we're hearing that Johnny Cueto has told them that he doesn't want to negotiate a contract extension once opening day rolls around. I mean, he's a guy who's a potential free agent. They moved Matt Latos. There's a sense around that team that deals have to be made. Something has to happen to the Cincinnati Reds. That core hasn't won. There's a sense that There needs to be some tweaking. There's a sense that there also needs to be maybe a couple of major additions. People still don't. You know, if you talk to people around the Reds, they're still not entirely thrilled with the idea of Brandon Phillips being around. So there's a lot happening with Cincinnati. And I just don't know how Aroldis Chapman, how it fits into what they want to do. But yeah, if you're asking me, I mean, I'd love to have Aroldis Chapman. But Aaron Sanchez doesn't get you Aroldis Chapman. And if you're talking about having to move two pitching prospects to get him, given where the Blue Jays are right now, I don't think you want to do that. The one major league sport that will be playing in North America tomorrow is the NBA. There are five matchups on Christmas Day. Wizards, Knicks, Spurs, Thunder, Cavs, Heat. That'll be a good one. Lakers, Bulls, and then Warriors, Clippers. Lots going on in the NBA. We're getting to the point now where players are starting to move around a little bit, or at least players are being put on the trade block, or at least there are discussions about them. A lot of teams having to make some pretty significant decisions. The Detroit Pistons already making a call on Josh Smith, for example. Howard Beck is the national NBA writer for Bleacher Report. We're going to talk a little hoops with Howard Beck when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of the Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child Jesus Christ was born on Christmas Day.
Alright, we're back. 11 o'clock, Renaud Lavoir, NHL insider from Tavia Sports, joins the Blair Show. 11:15, Mike Wilner, Blue Jays broadcaster and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll talk to Mike about the moves the Jays still need to make as we sit here on December 24th, focusing specifically on the bullpen. And then at 11:40, Jory Mittelstadt, host of The Bottom Line on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, which you hear every Sunday morning. Jory Mittelstadt will join us at 11:40. We'll break down week 17 of the NFL season and get you set for that. Everybody pretty much shuts down as far as the major sports go on Christmas Day, with the exception of the NBA. There are five games on tap tomorrow in the association: the Wizards and Knicks, the Thunder and Spurs, the Heat and Cavaliers, Lakers and Bulls, and Warriors and Clippers. Now, I was going to call them a marquee matchup. I don't know if you'd call anything involving the Knicks a marquee matchup anymore. I can remember a couple of years ago when the Nets moved to Brooklyn, and I remember being in New York down there with my daughter, and we just happened to walk into a sporting goods store to one of those fan shops. I don't remember what it was. Actually, might have been a Puma or Adidas store. But all I remember is that Brooklyn Nets merchandise was flying off the shelves. This was just after they'd announced the logo, where they'd unveiled the logo and had really started their marketing push. I mean, stuff was just flying off there. And I remember thinking to myself that this franchise was going to be, I thought it was going to be the NBA's marquee franchise. I mean, the Lakers are always going to be a marquee franchise. I get that. But I just thought, man, the Nets were going to be so cool. They looked like they were going to be good. They're going to be very aggressive out of the gate. Great ownership. And I was really interested in seeing how the Knicks would respond to that. Well, here we are, 2014 almost coming to a close. And you could make the case that both the Nets and the Knicks are just smoldering piles of mess right now. Howard Beck is a national NBA writer for Bleacher Report. You can follow Howard on Twitter, at Howard Beck is his Twitter handle. And Howard Beck joins the Jeff Blair Show. Howard, thanks a lot for doing this. I was going to ask you to rate the mess. Which mess is bigger? I mean, a lot of people are going to look at the Knicks and go, oh my God, the Knicks are, obviously that's a bigger mess than the Nets. But, you know, reading your piece on Bleacher Report, the Nets are in a, boy, they're in a pretty tight situation themselves, aren't they? I don't know how they get out of that. I really don't.
Yeah, and Jeff, the common thread here, and, you know, it's a common theme in New York, is that both of these franchises basically just tried to spend their way to greatness, sacrificing the present for the future. Both of them are guilty of, you know, overspending on the wrong players, of trading draft picks to get players. And so they've both done a lot of this mortgaging, and they're at different stages and dealing with it in different ways. So, yeah, the micro look, or the look at any snapshot right now, the Knicks look far worse off at 5-25. Obviously, the record is a disaster and their roster is terrible. But the Knicks are getting to cap room first. That just happens to be the way things set up for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're on their fourth GM in 4 years, basically, with Phil Jackson. And he is taking what I think is the right approach right now, which is, okay, things are a mess. You know, don't try to patch this thing up. Don't go for the quick fix. That's what's gotten the Knicks in trouble for years. So they're going to get cap room next summer. We'll see how well they're able to use it and who they're able to get. They also have their draft pick for the first time in a while, and it's going to be a really nice draft pick. So they've got some form of hope in the lottery and in free agency. The Nets have the better record and may even make the playoffs in this week Eastern Conference. The Nets situation is a little more dire in the long version of the short term, or the short version of the long term, which is that their cap room is not coming until at least 2016. And they've got three highly paid stars, Brooke Lopez, Darren Williams, and Joe Johnson, who have never really played like stars, but they make star money. And that's their problem. But they are trying to move those guys. And I think there is a market, contrary to people's, you know, skepticism here. They can find a place to put those guys. It's just a matter of what they're going to get back and whether it's not, you know, whether it's worth making those deals. But I think that Brooke Lopez, for certain, they can move by the trade deadline. Darren Williams, perhaps as well. And they'll try to retool on the fly, and we'll see how well that goes. But these teams were in an arms race, essentially, for the last few years. The Nets in particular, as you mentioned, you know, they were, you know, a hot team marketing-wise, and they were moving to Brooklyn, and they wanted to have big names to open that building. So they got their big names, and this is the price they're paying because, you know, they banked on the wrong guys.
What happened to Darren Williams' game? Has it deteriorated as a matter of age, or is it just simply that, you know, the team around him isn't as good as it was a couple of years ago? I got to tell you, Howard, I mean, we saw the Nets. Now, granted, my last image of the Nets last year was them beating the Raptors, so we'll have to throw that out there. But I've seen the Nets a couple of times on TV this year. I've seen them here. He's not the same player. He does not look to be the same player to me this year that he was last year. And I can't imagine he's fallen off the cliff that much.
Well, he started the season pretty strong. I mean, he's a guy who's got just a lot of ups and downs. In the last couple of years in particular, his time with the Nets, part of it's been injury. Part of it's been he was out of shape for a while. But he's had these persistent ankle issues. And, you know, he's a guy who, and he's very upfront about this to his credit, his confidence kind of waxes and wanes. You know, he has a hard time sustaining his head of steam. Like, you know, this is a guy who's got tremendous individual skill, who was an all-star at a very young age when he was in Utah, and who, you know, I mentioned this in the column I wrote yesterday. You know, people forget it wasn't that long ago Darren Williams was mentioned in the same breath with Chris Paul, and there was an actual legitimate debate among NBA talent evaluators about who was the better point guard, Chris Paul or Darren Williams. And it was split down the middle. Darren Williams, you know, was often considered better than Chris Paul. Now, it's changed dramatically in the last 4 years, but before he was traded from Utah to New Jersey at the time, he was still considered right there, and that's why the Nets wanted him, because he was an elite player and playmaker. And the combination of injuries and his own just confidence issues, and, you know, and sometimes it's the roster around him, he's become a diminished player. I don't know that he's even top 10 among point guards right now, maybe top, you know, 12 or 13. But they still see those bursts of greatness from him. You know, the guy can make shots. The guy can take his man and get in the lane. And it's just a matter of him being able to sustain it. I think maybe he'll be better off somewhere else. If they trade him to, say, Sacramento, smaller market, less media glare, and DeMarcus Cousins is the clear focus of that team, and Rudy Gay has established himself as a clear number two, that's a place where I think he could, like, fit in, blend in, not have it all on his shoulders, and be much more effective with kind of a lighter burden.
In conversation with Howard Beck, national NBA writer for Bleacher Report, and you can follow Howard on Twitter, at Howard Beck is his Twitter handle. Where do you see Josh Smith going?
Well, everybody around the league thinks he's going to end up with Houston. They've got a couple of things going for them. One, Dwight Howard, he and Josh Smith are friends from back in their AAU days in Atlanta. So there's that connection. The Rockets, obviously, just one of those teams that's very aggressive in pursuing guys anyway. They've got championship aspirations. They've got legitimate title hopes. And they've got an opening at power forward. I mean, they really, that's a spot where they've had, some guys who have been just fine holding down the fort, but they can offer Josh Smith that starting job on day one. The Dallas Mavericks, seem to be in this chase as well, but, they've got a Hall of Famer at power forward, and so I don't think Josh Smith is going to be starting in Dallas. So, the combination of being able to offer Josh Smith a starting job, title hopes, Dwight Howard, that's looking like Houston's in the driver's seat. Most people at this point expect that's where he'll end up.
Howard, it was great of you to join us this morning. Have a great holiday season. And like I said, keep track of those New York teams. They should be giving you plenty to write about.
Always.
In the new
Happy
year.
Holidays, Jeff.
You be well. That's Howard Beck, national NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Does a terrific job. That, by the way, is it's a terrific website. You can follow Howard on Twitter. At Howard Beck is his Twitter handle. Again, 5 NBA games tomorrow. Wizards, Knicks, Thunder, Spurs, Heat, Cavs, Lakers, Bulls, Warriors, Clippers. The Raptors return to action Saturday afternoon on Sportsnet Ontario. They will play the Clippers in L.A. Matt Devlin, Leo Routens, Eric Smith. They'll be on the scene. Matt and Leo will have a call of the game for you at 3:30. Don't forget Sportsnet Ontario. We have the next 7 Raptors telecasts. All of them will be on Sportsnet. So the Raptors have that long road trip. They've got a couple of games at home. All of those games will be in the tube on Sportsnet. He is one of our favorite NHL insiders. Always brings a fresh perspective. A lot to talk about around the league. Renaud Lavoie from TVA Sports. Renaud Lavoie will join us when the Jeff Blair Show returns on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.